feminist time travel. Time travel. Time travel. Time travel.
Hello and welcome to the second episode of Feminist Time Travel, the podcast by ProQuota Film. I'm Clara Devantier. I'm an actor and I also organize the film series Feminist Time Travel for ProQuota Film together with Svenja Heinrichs and Irina Tiab. And yes, this series obviously has the same name as this podcast, which is because we invite guests here who are curators or actors or directors to our feminist time travel project. And so today, my guest is Raya Knight. Raya curated a screening for us in May, and we are going to show Ava by Lea Misius on the 20th of May at Cinema Transtopia, which I'm really excited for, and we're going to talk about it a bit. So, Raya, you are an actor and a singer, and you've been working at the Maxim Gorky Theater in Berlin and with the collective Glossy Pane. And so if you're in Berlin, some of you might have seen Raya in Slippery Slope or more recently at Carmen. And those are also both plays who tell stories of Roma, as you are also one of them yourself. Wow, that came out super awkwardly. And you're also very active in the Roma community. And that is also how we met at the Akademia Film Festival of Romani Film. And before we start, I wanted to say, which I forgot last time, please rate and review this podcast. It's really important. We have really small projects, so it really helps us a lot if you feed the algorithm and just, you know, give us a 5-star review. Saraya, hello.
Hi.
Here we go. So nice to have you here. As I said, we already met, but always in very like work context. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start off with a childhood question.
Ooh.
Do you remember what was the first film you saw? Do you have a vivid memory of like a film experience in your childhood?
The first one? Yeah, that's pretty hard. I mean, I guess most kids of my age in Britain watched Bambi.
Mm-hmm.
Highly traumatizing film.
It is.
I definitely watched a lot of Disney as a kid, and my favorites were Mulan and Pocahontas. Love those films. I actually think Mulan is a really interesting film. Probably it has some like very not genuine or maybe like slightly problematic portrayals of Chinese culture.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, there's this one line in one of the songs, which I always really loved as a kid, where like Mulan dresses up as a warrior and hides and pretends to be a man. And then they have this song that they sing, and the men are all singing about what sort of woman they want when they go back from war. And she says, "What about a woman that speaks her mind?" And they all go, "Nah." And as a kid, I loved that bit.
You were like, yes,
yeah,
this is the spirit. Okay, yeah, my mom actually banned me from watching Disney movies because she was a bit like, I don't know, like Waldorf.
Yeah, yeah.
And she doesn't like the voices, like the animated, like the voices. She thinks it's really annoying, but also she thought it was too traumatizing. She was like, why do the characters always have to lose a parent? She was like, this is bad. My kids should not be confronted with that. But also I think I was a really like easily scared kid, so she was probably right about that. I would have been traumatized, probably, for sure. Like, yeah, I watched this Augsburger Puppenkiste. I don't know if you know that. It's a German thing where they have these little puppets. It's very, very slow tempo,
nice. Yeah.
Very kid-specific.
Yeah. I mean, I was like the only kid around whose mum would censor the sort of cartoons I was allowed to watch. I mean, my mum also, I was allowed to watch Disney, but I wasn't allowed to watch some specific cartoons. Like, also, all the Disney ones I had were old, right? They're not like the modern ones, which are much faster. But my friends never understood it when my mum would come in and be like, no, you can't watch this cartoon. I don't like it. It's too fast, or the images are too disturbing, or like this kind of thing.
Also, mums can just make stuff up. They're like, I don't like this. And then they're like, this is culturally bad for some reason. Well, at least my mum, I think, handle it that way a lot of times. Yeah. But so, I mean, I know that you mostly work in theatre, like you don't really do that much film, right? Can you describe like how this idea of acting came into your life?
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think I've always been a performer ever since I was young, and I've like performed a lot throughout my life, like before becoming a professional actor. Mm-hmm. And for me, the first sort of performance platform that I had was through music and singing, and I did a lot of singing and performing since I was quite young.
Yeah.
And then actually the first time that I started doing like professional performing acting for a living was through Gorky.
Mm-hmm.
And part of this project called the Roma Army, and that was also like the first time that I, you know, like worked in a professional theatre, but also the first time combining art and activism. And so the work that I did, especially in those first years of performing in Germany, also was very much political theatre and like art with a narrative that you want to tell or like needs to be told. Or I mean, all narratives, like, you know, not all narratives need to be told, but many narratives are valid and need to be told if they're on stage, presumably. But like with these plays, the idea or the feeling in the cast and within the production and in every performance was like you go on stage and you have a mission, which is to bring the audience in to your world and into an understanding with you, and to come out maybe a bit transformed or a bit changed or have their perspective shifted. And I think really in those first like years of playing Roma Army, that was our energy behind the performance. So yeah, the acting was actually kind of, I mean, I guess also, I think in those Yael Ronan productions also, which are much more autofiction, it's a fine line between, are you acting, are you performing, are you acting a version of yourself, are you performing a former you, like what, it's all very blurry. And in the beginning, that's when you first start playing them, that's what I think makes them impactful, is that you're getting something quote unquote authentic from the actors.
So did Yael Ronan kind of approach you about this, or like how did you get to the project if you were not like really acting
exactly
before?
I mean, so a lot of the shows that she's done, which are exploring like actual situations, or you know, that one of her plays is called The Situation, but like about actual current or somehow pressing political or identity issues, her and the dramaturg bring people who have stories about that, like people whose lives are intertwined with that topic. And so they are interested in you and how to put a version of you on stage. And I came to Gorky like somehow through that, like when with Roma Army, they wanted to cast someone from the British Romani community. And there was actually someone else who was meant to be in it from the British Romani community who then like couldn't be in it. And the stage and costume designer were this like quite famous British Romani couple who are artists, and they like Delaine and Damien Labar is what they're called, and they like were designing the set and the costume, and they actually had heard me singing like as a child in like a Romani event, and
but like in Britain.
In Britain, yes. Yeah. And they wanted to find someone or recommend someone to be in the production. And so they like out of the blue rang my mom and asked her if her daughter was still singing. So it was really...
So you came to Berlin for that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. And then you were like, amazing, I'm just going to stay here forever? Or
no.
How did that go down?
I mean, yeah, it's always funny. I never thought I'd be here this long, but I'm still here 9 years later. Yeah, it was a rolling thing in a way. So I came for... It was all very quick with Gorky also, because like with the Roma Army, because they needed someone kind of last minute. So I got asked to audition 2 weeks before the rehearsal started, I think.
Okay.
It was. And then I got the job, and then I moved for the rehearsals. And I had actually a flat just up the road from here at Checkpoint Charlie, which was quite a funny place to live for the first time in Berlin. Weird bit of town, but...
Feels very much metropolitan.
Yeah,
imagine,
yeah, like, but also with all of this, like the Checkpoint tourist hotspot and like, yeah, it was a funny place, but it was a good spot to like discover nice bits of Kreuzberg and, you know, some sort of old school Berlin vibes. And anyway, Roma Army did very well and toured a lot and played a lot. And so I was here a lot of the year playing. And then they asked me, like Yael and Irina asked me to be in another production. And then I was here. I actually still wasn't living in Berlin. I was just here for rehearsals and shows and like flying back and forth a lot.
Really young, right?
Yeah, I was 20.
Yeah.
So then like 21 for the second show. And then I was, living this quite crazy life traveling back and forth for shows every few weeks, every week. And I got to the point where I wasn't really living in either country because I was always traveling. And I decided to, yeah, to spend more time in Berlin and try and find a way to live here. And actually then I did a residency with Roma Trial. We applied for some money to create a residency program for Roma and Sinti women in Berlin who make jazz music. And it was like a 10-month residency, I think, which would like support, it was like me and two other women. It like supported us to get some promo images or like make a music video and do a gig. And there was someone who worked in the music industry who like worked with us to help us develop a more like public profile as women from the Roma diaspora making jazz and also coming from a Roma background and like questioning like, okay, what do people expect when they, because obviously Sinti jazz is such a big genre, but kind of somehow trying to break the stereotypes of what is expected of Romani women musicians, and what does it mean when we say Roma music, and can that also be contemporary pop music, can that be jazz, can that be, and if you're someone from the Roma diaspora making it that music, does that make it Roma music then?
Yeah.
You know, so that kind of thing. And yeah, it was really a nice project, and also like to give a platform to women and women in jazz, which is anyway quite a small niche, and then Roma women in jazz.
Yes.
So that was really cool. And after that residency ended, then I kind of stayed really and like kept working, always for work. Like I always had more shows coming up and different new productions coming. And I've been quite lucky in that way that like since I came here, I've always been working and had a another production coming up, so
that's the dream. But did you consider yourself more like a musician before, or maybe still, like, is the acting more something that like that something you dreamed
enough,
of?
Like now I would say now I'm like a theater maker, like that's my mm-hmm. job. I do that pretty much full time. But when the reason I got into Roma Army when I was 20 was because I was a musician and I could sing and perform like on stage comfortably. But since working in theater, funnily, ironically, theater's like my steady job and music is something that I do for the art of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's also, it's funny because theater's such a precarious industry, but like music's even worse.
And yes, of course, yeah.
I really like hate a lot of pop music culture and industry, the music industry culture, and everything about monetizing it and selling it and packaging it. And if you're an independent artist, all of the like bullshit commercial stuff that you have to do yourself is something that I really don't like and don't get any pleasure from. And for me, somehow kills a bit of the creative process and the joy of it. And I guess that's the same in a lot of art fields. But yeah, the reason I like theatre so much is because unlike music, at least in my case, there's a whole infrastructure and team around a play. Yeah. There's a premiere date. There's like 10 people doing different jobs, all working to the same aim on different components of one thing. Whereas for me, like when I released my EP, for example, it was me and the producer working until it was done.
Yeah.
And working with a visual artist and then like doing art direction, making a music video, editing a
music
video.
You need to do all of it.
Yeah. Like I edited music videos. I learned how to make images look nice in Photoshop. Like I, you know, like I'd learned so much stuff making this EP, but I did it all myself.
Yeah.
And actually I quite like collaborating and what that brings and the new creative potential that comes out of different people's expertise combining, and theatre is a space for that.
Yeah. So how do you, like, if you would say what a normal day of work would look for you? I mean, you are like one of a few artists who like actually just like goes to work, I imagine.
No.
Or, you know? Okay.
So I like have a steady job in theatre, but like, as you will know, I mean, luckily, in a way, Germany is quite specific in the repertoire theatre system here is quite unusual in that it gives you somehow a steady job, potentially. But when I say a steady job, I mean I'm playing like four times a month in two different theatres.
Yeah, true.
But that's quite steady for me. And
money's coming in. Yes.
And if I then have a production that year or two productions that year, then there's blocks of like full-time work, obviously, where you're rehearsing every day and then maybe playing in a different city sometimes and coming back and forth. But I also have a lot of time where I really try to keep free for like developing creative ideas and stuff. I mean, most of the productions I've been in, almost every production I've been in, I haven't just been in it as an actress. I've also done the music for the show or written, co-written it with other members of the team or developed it, produced it, applied for the funding, whatever. All of these different things. I've always done many different jobs, including performing it in the end. And that takes a lot of time around the outside, right?
Yeah.
I try to leave time to like write and think creatively, to develop new ideas. But obviously it's hard. Finding when you're always like having new projects coming up in different places, it's hard to have a structure.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I definitely struggle with over the years, to like maintain a kind of like creative discipline, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm still working on it. I don't know. I don't think I have the right.
Do you feel like you have developed some strategies?
I don't think I have the right answers.
No. You're like, no. No. Don't listen to me.
I think I'm most productive or like happy when I get up and swim in the morning. I'm quite lucky because I live in Vedding. I don't think anyone's ever said that sentence before, but I'm quite lucky because I live in Vedding, so I live near Flotsamzee.
Yeah.
And I like swim in Flotsamzee quite a lot.
That's so cute.
And that is, for me, like such a nice way to start the day.
And you're like a cold plunge person.
I have been. This winter I didn't do it, so I feel like I can't claim it.
Okay.
But I was for two winters, like the ice smashing, getting in there person.
Okay.
That was great, actually. Totally. All the benefits people say, it's true.
Yeah, people say that.
Really, like, yeah, absolutely. Dark Berlin winter depression, gone.
All right, that's the way.
Highly recommended.
You can't get therapy, just like jump in.
Who can get therapy? jump
to bed. if you can, that's good. You also, you said, like, you have always like a team around you. You have people that you work with, and like one context in that you work with is also your collective, Glossy Pain. Do you maybe want to talk a bit about like how that came about, like what topics are you focusing on? How's that different from working at Gorky, which is also like a really political place already?
I mean, I think for me, the first Glossy Pain production that we did back in 2020, we started it, was a really nice opportunity to put into practice myself the techniques I'd learned through working at Gorky, especially in Yelronen's ensemble-based productions, and to apply some of that method in a new context. And we did a lot of, like, our first production, Bang, was communally devised and co-written and very much a sort of shared vision. And it was interesting because obviously I think, there was like four women who wrote it, and we all came at the different topics from different angles. It's sort of like a collage piece in a way, and that was what made it so interesting, was our different perspectives, but also the like crossovers in our experiences and discovering those as we wrote. And the piece was like exploring sexuality, that sort of like alt-right incel movement, trad wives and desire and sort of feminist identity questions. And what was interesting was that we didn't necessarily aim to write a play that really went into that, but that's what came out of our collective psyche in a way.
Yeah.
And was the most sort of pressing thing that we wanted to write about then. And it was really fun, and it was also really different because obviously there's no stage designer doing everything for you, or there's no costume person ready to dress you. I mean, we had a team, obviously we had a stage designer and a costume designer, but we carried the floor off ourselves, or we had like this amazing set made by our costume designer, which was like, She also works a lot in state theatre, and it was using huge curtains to create, because we've performed it in TD quite a lot, and it's quite a long room, and we wanted to make the room more cozy and like work with the length. And she made this like amazing long corridor of pink curtains, and it was sort of almost like vulvic or like vaginal canal-y somehow. But every time we played it, and we were lucky to be invited back to play it quite a lot, but every time we played it, we had to steam it by hand. And it took hours.
Yeah,
and we didn't have industrial steamers. We had like hand steamers. Like, It was such a mission. But it's the sort of thing where you're like, yeah, I'm in the free scene. Like, I'm going to spend this whole evening steaming these curtains by hand and they will look beautiful at the end. And that's part of it. Like, that's, and I think that's quite nice. It's quite good not to get too comfortable and privileged and buffered by the state scene and expect someone to pick up your laundry for you. It's quite good to know the hard work that goes on to make it possible.
Then you can also, like, appreciate it. I mean, yeah, you know, I'm also, like, doing my own play right now, and I'm, like, every day on Vinted, like, shopping for costumes, and then I'm, like, running around the city picking up my boss, my packages, and I'm like, fine, you know? It just takes... It's really great, though, if you have someone to do it. There's a good reason why there are a lot of people working in a theater.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure. And... right now, you also are, like, touring around with Glossy Pane, right? You were at...
We had one show that we did in Theater an der Ruhr. Actually, quite a few, it premiered, I think it was in 2023, and we played it a lot around in the last few years. And then it was restaged just recently, like the beginning of the year, and we went to Luxembourg with it as well, which was nice.
Yeah.
And to see Luxembourg, which is, cool, Luxembourg, fancy. But yeah, so we're still like playing, and there will be new stuff coming up, just when I'm not exactly sure. Depends on the funding rounds.
Yes, it always does.
Yeah, but everyone's working. Also, that's the nice thing about collectives, everyone's always working on their own stuff, and then we come together and go away and do stuff and come back. And
And you also have like the background from something else that you just did, and you can just like reorganize your thoughts, which
is really the cute. Other members of the collective were just in a residency in Stadttheater Mainz working on a production as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to visit them, which was really nice also to see what they made in there. Like, it's always so nice when people who you love working with and who are really creative process you find inspiring, and then you can drop in on it and see what they've done. And yeah, that's also a nice thing about being in a collective, I guess, is not always being in the creative process, but then witnessing how it unfolds and watching something develop. And that's also something I really enjoy about, working adjacent to other people and like being inspired by them and the feedback loop of that.
If it works, it's really, it's really giving. I also wanted to talk a bit about you. We've talked about you. I wanted to talk with you about the film that you chose.
Yeah.
Ava, we're not gonna do any spoilers.
Okay.
Big ones. Let's put it like that and still try to talk about it a bit. I watched it last week.
What did you think?
I liked it a lot. I mean, I liked the style a lot, the colors.
Mm.
And the whole kind of like, I mean, it's very like vibey. So I did really like that, and I feel that also helped with maybe some things that... Okay, wait, so we already talked about it, that, for example, there were some critiques about it, saying like, I have to say a few words about the movie. So it's a film about a young girl who's 13 in France. And she learns that she's going to turn blind pretty soon. And it's basically about her, like, last summer seeing and experiencing, like, a lot of different things. And she gets a bit, like, she really starts to, like, test out a lot of boundaries and wants to experience a lot of things while she can still see. And, there were some critiques about it. What you already mentioned, that she was like naked quite a bit. But I don't know, I felt in the context of the movie where it was really like this painting and like it wasn't really sexualized. And also like there were a lot of naked people, to be honest. It was really like, oh yeah, French people like chilling
French
naked at the beach.
Naked.
And they just love it. I mean, no, but like I was like, oh, this is... I mean, I'm not per se against like showing people naked, you know, it's more about this, like, how do you show someone naked? And I feel if you show people who are supposed to be really young, I mean, this girl is supposed to be 13, the actress was actually 17, I think, but I think you should not like shy away from the fact that people discover sexuality pretty young.
Mm.
So, I mean, some people do. And to also like show that in a way that can maybe be a good way. Like, you know, it's not like per se like, oh, don't show young people being sexual. And I felt the portrayal was not like male gazy or those kind of things, but I can also see people feeling differently about that. And then, of course, I was really interested in how you felt about the portrayal of Roma and new people in the film, because I do feel that, so Ava meets a boy who's like a bit older than her, which of course is also like when you're 13 can be quite a lot when someone is like 5 years older than you. And he is still, I feel, portrayed in quite a cliche way, or like in a way that people might expect, let's put it that way. Like in the beginning, it also seems that he seems kind of homeless, and it's actually, he's not actually homeless, but you know, just like these images who come back, but then also some things of that might be reality. So yeah, you know, I'm just interested in how you felt about that.
Yeah, I mean, to start with where you just started, so to start with the sexuality of Ava, I found that I chose the film because it's a film that stayed with me because I was surprised by it. And I was also surprised, and like there's something quite arresting, I think, about the film and how it's shot. And so it's like shot on 35mm, so it's very beautiful. The images are very rich. And the fact that the storyline kind of pivots on this woman, this young woman losing her sight, this young girl losing her sight, I think it plays with that through the format of being so beautifully shot as well, and like saturated in this rich colors of 35mm. And I thought it was interesting how a lot of the film, in this sort of very nice French poetic voiceover, Ava is talking about the fear of blackness coming in and like closing everything off, and the fear of losing that rich image that she hasn't even really yet had the chance to explore because she's so young. And I was, when I rewatched it, when I was looking for things to suggest for this series, I was like, oh, okay, when they're talking about the fear of the blackness coming in, like, what is it actually that they're referring to? And I think partly it's obviously her losing her sight and going blind and not being able to see and living in darkness forever. But then the other part of it is they play a lot with it. Like the first shot is this very powerful shot of this like black dog running through a beach of all these sweaty white bodies covering each other in sun cream. And then there's this dog dying through it. And it comes and it rests by her. And that's the dog of Juan, who is the Roma character in the film. And the dog has this sort of menacing energy because you're worried, like, is it going to attack anyone? Is it going to hurt the child?
He's really nervous.
But it doesn't. It just rests by her. And for me, that's kind of what the film is playing with, is this, we see violence, we see fear in the dark, in the unknown, in the other that is not fitting into the scene. But actually, the dog isn't a danger to anyone. In fact, it saves Juan's life later in the film. Kind of, not really a spoiler. But and one of the images of darkness that is often shown throughout the film is the police on big black horses who are sort of circling this sort of idyllic French holiday beach scene in a very menacing way. And their dark shadow is sort of cast over the bright sand. And having watched a bit of a documentary once about like French police violence and like the sort of carceral state and state control, I think that's very much a tension that in the film of exploring, okay, where is the violence actually of society? Yeah. Is it in the dark unknown other, or is that dark unknown other actually the apparatus of the state? And somehow like that, I was interested in it for that reason. I also thought, I'll get to the Roma bit in a minute, but like I thought the relationship between the mother and Ava is quite interesting, especially in terms of what is potentially quite difficult about the film, which is Ava being a 13-year-old in the plot. She's a 13-year-old who has a sort of sexual awakening in the film. And like, there's obviously the question of like, well, is that even possible if she's 13? Is that abuse? Is it sexual coercion? Da, 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 da. But I think the plot line goes very, the way the plot is framed paints it as strongly as it can against that narrative of her being coerced or abused or corrupted or taken advantage of. I think it shows her being someone who, firstly, she's given permission by her mother to have sex in a way that is slightly uncomfortable.
Yes.
And like her mum is shown as this kind of free, fun, sexually active woman who is trying to be cool with her daughter in a way that feels quite cringy, and is saying like, oh, I also had sex at your age, go and do it. And Ava's like, oh my God, shut up.
Yeah.
And but in a way that somehow sets it up for it to be like, okay, she's been given permission, but it's not something that she looks like she wants, and she doesn't want to hear about it, and she's like embarrassed. But then when she realizes that she's going to go blind, suddenly it's like she wants to experience everything while she can still see.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting how, because I was really watching it thinking about, okay, what, you know, is how problematic is it?
Yeah.
And she really, I don't know, I think the plot line really gives her agency for her decisions.
Yeah.
It's very clearly shows a young woman who goes after what she wants, and like there is no one forcing her into these situations, which, yeah, is maybe more true than is comfortable.
Yeah, I also like that. I was like, oh, she seems to be like comfortable with her body and like showing it.
Mm.
And it's not something that you would see a lot or that you would assume like from a really young girl. But I'm like, yeah, I mean, might be nice if you're like a 13-year-old girl and you're not ashamed of your body. Like, it's also maybe worth portraying that version or that possibility that someone at that age is, yeah, comfortable in their body and experiencing a lot of, I mean, she's like, also because she's losing her sight, she wants to like experience a lot of sensations like
exactly,
through yeah. her skin. And yeah, that makes kind of perfectly sense. So.
And I think she really, when I was questioning whether or not I thought it was okay, it's like, but she really goes after him a lot.
Yeah. She's a bit rude.
But somehow that, I liked that. It's like, there's this person with drive, with an ambition that is maybe uncomfortable to watch and is going against what I would expect or even think would be okay for a girl of that age. But because of the way the plot is framed, it feels like she's in control of her destiny.
Yeah.
She's taking control back from what is potentially a very life-limiting disability.
Yeah.
And the stuff with the Roma character I found interesting, because I didn't necessarily, when I watched it the first time, there's nothing in the blurb about him being Roma.
Mm.
You have to kind of look quite hard on the interviews with the director to find anything about it. And then it made so much sense suddenly when they went to the Romani camp at the end of the film. And I was like, oh, okay, he's meant to be Roma. And maybe I was slow to pick it up even.
Yeah.
But that's somehow because I wasn't expecting there to be a Roma character in the film. I didn't assume that because he was sleeping on the beach, he was Roma.
Yeah.
Why would he be? But then suddenly all the little hints dropped throughout the plot. I was like, okay, of course. And I found it interesting that she finds him, because there's this scene in the bathroom with her mum where her mum, it's sort of shown throughout the film that her mum has maybe like a thing for people of colour and maybe fetishizes them a bit.
Yeah.
And Ava is, I think, potentially dual heritage. It's never said where she's from. But her mum in the bathroom at one point when they're like doing their makeup together says like, oh, you're dark like your father.
Yeah.
And Ava like looks at herself in the mirror and you can see that she's seeing herself through the eyes of her mother in a way, through this othering gaze of, mm-hmm. I'm dark, I'm different, I don't fit in. And somehow with the dog finding her on the beach, it's like she is the dark other in that scene, and she feels like that, and she doesn't feel comfortable in her world. And I like that her first connection with Juan, who is the Romani boy, she steals his dog.
Yeah.
And I like that because that's such a stereotype about Romani people, is that they come and they steal your dogs, yeah. and they steal things, and
oh, they steal dogs?
In England, everyone thinks that people steal Romani people steal their dogs. If a dog goes missing, they're like, it's the gypsies.
Oh, really?
Like,
oh,
I don't think they want your dog, mate. But anyway, yeah, it's like, as in England, at least, it's a stereotype that Romani people are going to steal your dog. I like that it starts with her stealing his dog.
Yes.
And already then starting to invert this expectation of, yeah, what do we expect from her?
Mm.
A girl from a maybe slightly middle class background, and what do we expect from him? And the director said that she wrote the character, it was like her, I chose it also because it's a film written and directed by a woman, and she was also very young when she did it. It was her graduation film. And she said that the character of Juan was inspired by a Romani guy in her school class who was really like treated very badly by the teachers and experienced a lot of institutional racism at school. And she wanted to put that in the film and show that experience. And that is how we first meet him, is with the police like chasing him off the beach. And I think what I saw in that scene was a disproportionate amount of like police violence or police involvement in a argument between two people.
Yeah.
And how that is often the case where the where Romani people are concerned, the like state violence is escalated and they're treated with like disproportionate levels of control or what's the word? I don't know. Yeah. Treated badly.
Yeah.
More badly than other people.
Yes.
brain work. I liked also that he is played by a real Roma person from France, and Manouche, I think. And I think also members of his family from looking at the credits and the surnames in the film. And she said that she went to, like the director went to like a lot of different Romani camps around Paris and in the rest of France looking for people to be in the film or who would be comfortable to be in the film. That process, I would love to know more about. I'm quite interested in that, how that was done and like how that outreach happened, what it looked like, who brought her there. Like, you know, these are quite difficult places for a white French director to access.
Yes.
But I think, you know, in terms of like representational politics, she had a Roma character in her film and it was played by a Roma guy. That's quite cool. That's like more than we generally get.
And
in that way, I liked that. And also I thought the portrayal of the Romani camp was quite authentic. And she said in an interview, the director, that it was quite hard to film there because the Romani women aren't meant to be filmed and it's quite private and they don't want people, like documenting them. But clearly, like, they got a good, there must have been a good relationship of trust set up to even allow people in to film.
How are they not meant to be filmed?
Well, I think it's quite private. Like, the women are quite protected in traditional Romani communities and like sort of not meant to be like exposed to the outside, or in many settings it's quite conservative and quite they want to keep away outside influence or outside gaze on them, which is sort of a two-way street of discrimination and protection versus some more old school patriarchal ideas.
I felt it was also interesting because when I watched the film, I thought that I hadn't really seen any portrayal of Romani people in film, like positive or negative. Like, I was like, oh, I've just never seen this in a film. And that's weird. And maybe I'm also not like, I didn't do like deep research now on like, oh, where have Romani people been portrayed in film? But I think it kind of speaks to the fact that like I did watch a lot of movies in my life, and just this group of people is very intensely like underrepresented in media. Is that fair to say?
I mean, I think the Roma and the Romani people, I would say actually are kind of like disproportionately overrepresented in film, but not by themselves.
Yeah.
So there's many films and series which will have a Romani or quote-unquote gypsy character who is there as a sort of exotic, corrupting, like frightening, vilified plot device, basically, or portrays, or a bit like in this film, plays the role of giving freedom to someone who can't have it otherwise. And so often the Romani in film are the freedom needed for someone trapped. But it's always a very contradictory portrayal, because like in this film, the Romani, I think, are often portrayed as being very affected by discrimination and racism, whatever they are, and being ostracized and pushed to the margins, but then embody this like free bird roaming liberation of out of strict societal control. Yeah. So it's like, okay, so either, I don't know if you can be both, yeah. but this, that's always the sort of stereotype or the clash in how they're portrayed. And I was interested in Ava because I think it does show both. It shows a sort of truth in the middle of the two, yeah. of those sort of portrayals. And yeah, and it's played by people who are actually Romani. So I found that, yeah, it's, when it comes to like Romani portrayals in film, it's like taking what you can get.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking of now like Chocolat, for example. Do you know Chocolat?
Oh, yeah. Like I watched that like 100 years, but there's Johnny Depp, right?
Yeah, it's Johnny Depp playing the the sexy Romani guy.
Okay, yeah.
It's no, another
I
French.
I remember that. Oh, God.
Nice mm-hmm. French story. And it's the same in a way. He's yeah. the freedom that she needs from her boredom, from her small French village. Yeah. He comes, he's the disrupting force.
Kind of a magical creature
exactly.
in a way.
Exactly, yeah. yeah. And so often that is what a Romani character is in a film. It's a plot device for the white character's liberation yeah. or like freedom from their circumstances with the kind of danger of that.
Yeah.
And I liked what this film, there's a twist at the end where I felt like it kind of, it reclaimed that a bit. It was like, it was taking back control of it a little bit at the end, I thought.
Yeah.
I won't say how because no, people are going to see it.
Yeah, now that we're talking about like Chocolat.
So you no, have seen it.
I have seen it. Yeah, yeah. I just remembered, but like I was like 12 or something. And now that I'm also thinking about it, I was like, I think I also just like didn't pick up the hints. Like, you know, I don't know if it's like explicitly stated in the filming. I would just remember, but like for me, just because like I wasn't like really in contact with a lot of Romani people, and I didn't really, I mean, I guess I understood what like misconceptions are, but I wouldn't have even probably yeah understood the symbolism of someone wanting to hint like, oh, this is a Roma character. So
I mean, it did a lot for Johnny Depp's image, you yeah. know. Forever after that, he was the kind of boho
yeah
cultural appropriation gypsy yeah. man.
It was just like, I'm just gonna do that forever now.
But he did. It was interesting. I think it was in preparation for that role, actually. He might have played a Romani character in another film, and I might be getting the chronology confused, but he went and actually lived with this famous Roma band, oh, the name of which is escaping me in this moment. No. Yeah, anyway, he went and lived with them and as research. And yeah. I think that's quite a, there's some quite fun stories about that online, I think. But he, I mean, he was interviewed about it for this film, the Chaplin film.
Yeah.
And obviously he only speaks well of them and his time there. And he found it very interesting and revealing and learned a lot and la, la, la. All of that. Yeah.
let's just
that
leave
whole
it.
Thing. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, but even so, I find that quite interesting that Johnny Depp went and lived with a Romani band.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just wondering, because like...
Oh, what is their name? Sorry, I have to find it.
Yeah, you can find it.
No, I'm just going to have to find it later.
I guess I was just wondering...
Tarif Dahadouk, I think that's where he lived. Sorry.
Yeah.
I think that was the band.
Yeah. Because like what I said, like I didn't pick up the clues, but I imagine... You did also, like, as a younger person, do you feel like the portrayal of, affected, like, the portrayal that you saw, like, in pop culture, do you remember that having, like, any effect on you? Or you, I don't know, being annoyed by it or being neutral about it? I don't know.
I think generally it's always just quite disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was one kids show that I used to like watching. I think it was The Borrowers. It's like a book that got turned into a film for mm-hmm. children in England. I think that was what it was called. And there was a Romani character in that, but obviously he was like a crooked thief who stole their boots or something.
Yeah.
But you're super excited as a kid when a Romani vado, a Romani caravan wheels into the scene and it has all of the cultural iconography, but none of the cultural authenticity, and it's played in a like kind of cartoon caricature-ish portrayal of a Romani villain. Yeah, I think that that's often been the experience of watching anything that has a Romany character in it. Also, I mean, of course, we were talking about Disney earlier. Of course, as a kid, I loved Esmeralda. I think that's quite, it's a woman who, at least in the Disney version, is a Romany character. I mean, in the book, she's not actually Romany. She's like stolen or some bollocks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a whole other thing about white people being corrupted, blah, blah, blah. But in the Disney version, they made her like a real Romany character, quote unquote real. She's a cartoon, but yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
And I think actually Esmeralda in the Disney film comes across quite well. Like, she's quite cool. I mean, all Disney heroines of that Disney era, I guess, still are quite cool characters. But like, as representations go, yeah, she was a dancer. But a lot of Roman people do dance traditional dancing to make money in the square. Like, I'm sure also historically in that era, that would have been a way that they would have been most conspicuous or visible. Yeah, as a character, I think she's quite cool, actually, as a Disney character. I'm really not a Disney fan. Mm-hmm. I'm not, like, I don't know why.
I'm a lot of Disney today.
But like, that was one of the characters who was conspicuously represented as having Romany background.
Yeah.
And obviously nowadays it's like Peaky Blinders.
Mm-hmm.
Peaky Blinders is another one where it's like, oh, yeah, it's super cool that a really mainstream TV show that everyone loves and is now trying to dress like the main family are meant to be Romany. But also, there's so much stereotypical bollocks in there that just, like, goes on and on. And, like, as the series goes on and now the film, it just gets to a point where it's, like, a bit ridiculous and annoying. Have you seen it?
I haven't. No, I haven't. Like, I mean, I have the image of, is it Killian?
Yeah.
Like something.
Sexy Killian.
I see his face in front of me right now, but no, I haven't seen it.
Lucky you. No, I'm joking.
No, but it's interesting. Like, if we are thinking about... If we are maybe thinking about the present and the future, hopefully, what do you kind of wish for, or how? I mean, I feel it's always like really important that arts do their part in like breaking stereotypes, and of course we know like representation matters and stuff like that. So yeah, and you do also say a lot like, oh, you know, we take what we can get, but maybe this was like a version of like what could be dreamt of.
yeah, totally. I mean, it's also, I don't mean to somehow be like dismissive of wanting better. And I think in another context, or obviously I would love a perfect world where we can break the racist stereotypical portrayal of Romany people of the last like centuries, but it's a long way. It's a hard battle. It's a lot to unpick, but I do think it's happening. There are films being made for Romany people, centering their narratives, and they do exist. They're just not being produced on a mass scale, obviously, or like not, there's not a lot of them. And most of them have probably played at the Akadakir Festival of Romany Film, which is great because that means I've seen a lot of them over the years, which is like a real privilege to have had access to that. But it's gradual, but it is happening. I think like, when given the platform and the resources and the access to the means of self-representation, Romany people can do it themselves, and they are doing it themselves. It's just like a question of distribution of resources and who has the means to tell that narrative. And in an ideal world for this film festival, I would have loved to have chosen a feminist film written and directed by a Romany woman telling this story, for example, but I couldn't find one, or I hadn't seen one. Maybe there is one that I haven't seen and I would love to see it if it's there.
Please reach out.
Please message me. I mean, there's one, there's quite a lot of also, but they're hard to access. That's the other thing. Like, I found some, I had a list that I wanted to watch for this podcast, and they're really hard to get hold of also.
Yeah.
And luckily I'd seen Ava on Mubi, and one of the reasons why I also wanted to suggest it was because, as you said, some of the portrayals are stereotypical or do fall into cliche, but in such a sort of like clear way that it's not messy or entangled. There's not, for me, it was very obvious.
Yeah.
It was very clear to point out. And that's something that maybe in the screening, I'd be super interested to talk about with the audience, like what they see in that, what they take from it, and really being able to call it out and name it so clearly, because it's so clearly shown. But also there is a truth in it. And that tension of, like, for example, in the film, there's a Romani girl who's getting married at 16. That is obviously not something that I, as a feminist, align with. But is it a reality? Is it a truth? Yeah, like, Romani girls get married young in traditional communities. So that should be told.
Yeah.
Like, just because it's something which is maybe not comfortable or isn't what I would wish, it doesn't mean it's not happening. And then I shouldn't talk about it or show it.
Yeah.
That's more reason to show it and talk about it, actually. And I don't think that it's done in a victim-y, oh, poor her, boo-hoo, she's a victim of her circumstance way. Like, she's pretty cool.
Yeah.
She's got quite a lot of agency in the film, actually.
Yeah.
She's got quite a lot of, she's the final click in the narrative. And so that is a complexity which is worth exploring. I didn't quite answer your question, though. Sorry.
What was my question? I don't even remember. I got like a closing question. That is, like, what would you recommend to someone who's maybe, like, young, maybe like 16, and from, like, a Romani background, and wants to get into, yes, telling their own stories or telling stories in general? You also said, like, oh, things are hard to access, which kind of, you know, makes it hard for people to see themselves represented and stuff like that. Not everybody's going to get picked up by Yael Ronan, flown to Berlin. So, like, what would you say to, like, a young person?
I mean, I do think that the industry is changing. And, for example, there's now Patrin Films, which is led by two British Romanis, Jacqueline White and Lisa Smith. They are producing, directing, writing, etc., films about Romani people, by Romani people. And that's a change. Like, that's, and they're my age, or, you know, like, these are, like, the new generation coming through. I think things are shifting, and there are these opportunities out there now from the younger generation. And I also think I'm always, like, amazed by the level of pride and self-representation which social media gives people. There's so much really cool influencers on Instagram and TikTok talking about Romani heritage and identity, which is also, like, even for me, I'm 29, TikTok is still a bit too, I'm too old for TikTok.
Yeah.
But even so, I'm like, this is sick. Like,
yeah.
I wish this had existed when I was young. Or, I mean, for me, I don't know if I necessarily needed it, because I was lucky in that my mum's an activist, so I was raised with it. But, like, there is stuff out there now that is accessible and empowering and joining globally in a very different way. Yeah, but I don't know. I'm not sure. I think, I don't know if I'm qualified to give advice on how to, like, access the industry and tell your narrative, because I think the film industry or the art industry is always really hard to get into, to get through, to get stuff made in, and it's not an easy place regardless of your story, your background. You know, obviously it's an industry which will always privilege the wealthy because they can afford to fail.
Yeah.
And that's something which needs to change for everyone. And I think the more initiatives that are brought in to help shift that balance, we will get more interesting stories about Romani people.
Yeah.
And it's already starting to happen.
Beautiful. So if people want to find you, want to see you, where can people find you in real life or virtually?
Find me swimming in Plotzensee every morning and night. No.
Please all come.
Please don't do that. Where can you find me? I'm playing in Gorky until many people in Berlin might know this, but the Sherman Langhoff era of Gorky is ending this summer. So I'm playing in Gorky until the end of May. I'm playing in Thalia in Hamburg, a show called Pornea, until the end of the season, maybe next season, I don't know yet. I am going to be in Budapest at the Roma Heroes Theatre Festival at the beginning of May doing a solo show. Anyone in Budapest, come through. And I'm going to be playing a lot in Freiburg from the autumn. I'm doing a new show in Freiburg, which is quite exciting. I don't think I've ever been down that far.
Exploring Germany.
Yeah. So if anyone wants to come to Freiburg, that would be awesome. If not, I have some more shows in Berlin probably, but yeah, just message me online. I always like to hear from people. It's nice.
Yes, it is. And of course, if they want to see you in the near future, they can come to the screening of Eva at Cinema Transtopia. It's the 20th of May and Rai's going to be there and we're going to have a little talk. And of course, we want as many people there as possible to talk a bit more about the film. And also, which I'm going to say again, please give this podcast a rating. That would be great if you liked it. You can also write a little feedback. And with that, I would say goodbye and see you at the screening and see everyone who's listening, hear everyone who's listening at the next podcast episode.
Nice. Thanks for having me.
Feminist Time Travel ist ein Podcast des ProQuote Film e.V., unterstützt von der Mehrkulturförderung der Berliner Sparkasse. Falls ihr uns unterstützen oder immer up-to-date sein wollt, dann folgt uns doch einfach bei Instagram unter @feministtimetravel, alles aneinander, oder abonniert den ProQuote Film Newsletter. Und kommt natürlich auch gerne zu unseren Screenings, die wir ungefähr einmal im Monat überall in Berlin veranstalten. Aufnahme, Schnitt und Postproduktion des Podcasts macht das Studio 36. Das Konzept ist entwickelt von Clara Devantier, Irina Thierp und Svenja Heinrichs.